Welcome back, folks, to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we have David Lemon and Nick Paquette from Abstract Marketing Group, Greg.
That's right. And today's episode is sponsored by Abstract Marketing Group.
But hang on a second here. These guys are pros at lead generation, bro. Pros.
They are. You know why they're pros? Or why we know they're pros? Because we actually use them.
Yeah, that's right.
I use them in my business.
Full disclosure. I'm an Abstract client too. So, man, we can't tell all the listeners our secrets. So we're clients of Abstract. Greg went first. I went second. And then we were in St. Louis for the DLC stakeholders meeting. And so we said, you know what? Let's go talk to the boys at Abstract, Greg. And what do they tell you to read? What do they want you to read on the air here for them?
Well, they have a read, but I want to tell you what they do is lead generations. And as we know right now with LED lighting, everybody's going to do it at some point, so get in the door, and that's what these guys are good at doing for you. So if you're looking to find a sustainable approach to growing your business and expanding your market share, Abstract is wanting to assist you in your goals. Not only do they provide business-to-business leads through outbound sales, they have an award-winning agency dedicated to creative marketing assets through video, print, web design, and social. You can give them a call at 314-526-0381. Or schedule an appointment online at it's www.abstractmg.com. That's ABSTRAKTMG.com.
Boom!
That's usually Mike's spot. I can do the boom. I had to read it and make sure I had it all right, but it's abstractmg.com. And if you mention Get a Grip on Lighting to Abstract, they will give you a 5% discount on your monthly outbound services.
What will they give us?
More sponsorship, maybe. We'll see.
And, of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, folks. Trust me. You want to join us? You have to watch the YouTube video to see why that's funny, folks. NAILD.org. But for right now, hey, let's talk a little bit of sales generation, lead generation, with the specific goal of doing it for LEDs on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Nick Paquette and David Lemon.
Thanks. Thanks for being here. How's it going?
It's going good, man. Say hi to Greg Eric.
Hey, Greg Eric.
What's up, Greg?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us. You guys set up a studio. Works out great.
Yeah, I think we need full disclosure that we're clients of Abstract, both of us.
I feel like that's fair.
I think we need to tell the listeners out there that, you know, we are users of your services. Tell me what it is about lighting you guys like so much. Either one of you go first.
Things that I like lighting so much. First of all, light is the greatest metaphor in all of writing and all of narrative. So I'm attracted to light to begin with, and I'm a big narrative nerd, and I love what light actually accomplishes. So there, from a narrative standpoint, I like light itself.
I'll be a little less metaphorical and a little more practical. I love lighting because we can simultaneously make the world a better place and make a bunch of money doing it at the same time. And it's been a great opportunity for us to be green in more ways than one.
You've always been way more practical than me, man.
Yeah, that's true. So we've had a ton of success working with lighting companies, and I know you guys have both had a ton of success retrofitting and upgrading people. And along the way, I like to think we're making the world a better place as well. So,
mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I contemplate that a lot because so. I actually took a test, and it's weird. Most people think I would be a right winger, mm-hmm. but actually my personality is very left wing. Mm. So I have the basic personality of an extreme left wing person. Although most people would think I'm very conservative when they spoke to me.
Okay.
And my implication is one to break the rules. My personality is one is to get around the regulations and do stuff through the other way, and that's very actually sort of lefty. Think about it, right?
Cut corners.
Yeah, not cut corners. No, okay. No. I'm not talking about cutting corners here. I'm talking about doing what's right, doing what's illegal to do what's moral.
Ooh.
Right? So sometimes the legal and the moral are in conflict with one another.
Gray areas.
Yeah, so for example, in 2009, I found out that Ontario only recycled 6% of its fluorescent lamps and mercury-containing lamps.
Same.
Yeah. And Canada has this reputation of being very green. Right, which really is a lie. But it really bothered me personally. Like I really thought about that. And I said, that really, really bothers me. And then it turns out that it's legal for me to ship tractor trailers full of new fluorescent lamps, but as soon as they became spent or burnt out, it became illegal. So what's the difference between a flipped over tractor trailer with new fluorescent lamps that breaks or used fluorescent lamps that breaks? What's the difference? There is no practical
difference. Say typically nothing.
There is no difference. There's the mercury contamination is the same. So it made no sense. So I went on then to start change the laws in Ontario by breaking them. So I started breaking all the laws in Ontario and just doing it anyway. And goading the Ministry of the Environment to come and I'm saying it real thing, yeah. come in and stop me, and ended up changing the laws. So instead of stopping the what we create, sort of large volume handler status with DVOA, you know, it was changed to be allowed. So I think about this sort of stuff, and I look at, you know, are we actually making an impact, or, you know, are we environmental stars, or what, you know, how you'd say it? Who saved the kilowatt hours? Is it our customers who saved the kilowatt hours, or is it us? Like, these are, you know, are we just facilitating the savings for them? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, oh yeah, we're being green. We're not really being green, Nick. We're just lining our pockets, my friend.
But we are educating people
sure.
who lead to them being more green. If we didn't exist in the world and we didn't make it as easy of a process and they never knew that these savings existed, would they have ever done it without our interfering and coming into their life to do what
it's
we do.
Very egotistical of Nick.
That's never been said about Nick in his life.
Never heard that before.
Never been said.
I'm conflicted on this, what I'm saying. I agree with you and disagree with you at the same time. You know, with the lamp recycling thing, it's like now Ontario, I think, recycles 40 or 50% of the lamps.
Sure.
Well, that's right? Good to hear.
Yeah, and I personally was instrumental in helping make that happen. But at the end of the day, who made it happen? Is it the people that recycled the lamps? You know, like who, like, you know, it's just, you're a part of this history of the world and you like to think you're making a mark or whatever it is, but I don't know, at the end of the day, I think I just want the money. You know what I'm saying?
It's a business after all, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it gets too complicated when you start going down that path.
So what we're saying is we're getting more practical as we go down the line, or maybe we're just getting more honest from David's beginning. I think I will stick to my point, though. There's a way for us to make money and do a good thing at the same time. I still think that's a win over us choosing some other industry where we potentially could make significant money and not do any good and or potentially do harm. There's plenty of big business in the world that you could argue harms society.
Yeah, tobacco would be one of those.
Tobacco, alcohol, firearms. Sure. Take your pick of evil overlord. All of them make a ton of money without doing any good. So I would argue
they
that
they have
you can
to
do both.
Give away their profits in order to help the world. Whereas the generation correct. Of profits by us is is reducing whatever, you know, greenhouse gases or what have you. What do you feel about all this, money bags?
No, I think it's important. I agree with Nick to some degree that, you know, if you can do good and make money at the same time, all the better.
And yeah, but the money comes first.
Money comes first.
Yeah.
So make the money, then do the good.
No, I think that if you can combine them both, you're lucky. And I think you got to think, like, largely, if you look at the last 20 years, okay, in human, all of the efficiency gains are from lighting in the world. And, from electricity generation, solar panels, wind, right? And then, but on the energy saving side, it's all lighting. Lighting has been 99% of energy savings, or effective energy savings. Has come from lighting. You talked about this creatures of the light sort of thing. I'm actually very interested in that as well. I find lighting is also an art as well as a mystery.
It brings us a sense of safety. First,
light is at the heart of security. Absolutely.
Yes,
it's at the heart of security.
And I think the industry itself, like constantly trying to better your vision, like your actual visual and clarity of what you're actually seeing, is probably at the core of it all. So like your actual sight, what we use every single day to judge our decision-making processes is all within light and what you see. So.
Well, it's interesting. They don't really even know what light is.
Ooh.
So okay. It's like, what's that? Yeah, what's happening is basically where we are right now is it's kind of like the fish becoming aware they're in water. So how does light actually work? We're kind of swimming in light in a way, right? And the only reason I can see you right now is because of the light that you're reflecting at me. And that's inside of you in a way too, in your eyes. I can see light in your eyes. As humans, mm-hmm. I can see that you're alive, right? There's a lot of to light that we don't understand. That's very deeply fascinating, actually, in some instances. But Greg, I don't know if it belongs on the Get a Grip on Money podcast. You guys,
yeah,
I can go pretty deep.
No, it does. I mean, we were at the DLC convention this week, and that's basically what we've been talking to just about every one of our guests about. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are PhDs. I asked the question, how many people in lighting are PhDs now?
Yeah, a lot of PhDs.
5 years ago, there were none.
Yeah.
Now there's, you know, several at least that we've talked to.
So did they get in because of the money, or did they get in because they believe in light?
The PhDs?
Yeah.
Good question. I think because there's the opportunity right now in lighting to that it's unknown. And to Michael's point is that we don't really know what light is. Mm-hmm. That's where it's at. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do as part of this podcast in a way, mm-hmm. is figure it out.
I think there are people in the world, Nick, that aren't as concerned about the accumulation of wealth as the four of us.
Mm-hmm. That's serious. A fair statement.
Totally
yeah.
No, I'm like, deadly serious with
yeah.
that. And there's a feminine energy around that. Doesn't mean that men don't participate in that. But it's like the masculine energy is like swim through the trees with a knife in your teeth and mm-hmm. get the prey and bring it back. Or there's like something very direct and understandable about that. But there's something to wanting to help people through light mm-hmm. that I'm aware of and I can see with these people. Mm-hmm. But they make statements that make no sense to the guy swinging through the trees with a knife in his teeth. Like they say things like, yes, we're really excited about the health effects of lighting and you know this sort of thing. And I'm like, well, can I sell the health effects of lighting? Well, we don't really know anything about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are you excited about?
Let me sell you the results that I don't know.
Well, this is it. They don't really know. There's a lot of speculation, but like, you know, scientists get excited when they think they might know something. Mm-hmm. Salesmen get excited when they think they can close a friggin' deal. Mm-hmm. So there's a disconnect on either ends of the business there, which a lot of people are not acknowledging. Mm-hmm. If one company's claiming that their lighting systems are healthy. I mean, imagine you guys picking up the phone and saying, you know, we can, you know, never mind energy savings, we can increase your productivity by, mm-hmm. now there's a sales
lowering your sick days. Yeah.
Exactly. Like this is incredible if it were possible. We just don't know if it's possible yet.
Yeah.
And a lot of people want it to be possible right now, right?
Well, we're getting there, trying to figure it all out, aren't we?
I don't know if we're going to get there, bud.
Well, we're working towards it. Whether we actually figure it out, unknown. What?
So is it so for us, it's the thrill of the hunt in terms of chasing new customers and new dollars and new bank accounts. For the more scientific side, or maybe the better among us, is it still the thrill of the hunt, but for discovery and advancement, new technology, new knowledge, are we both ultimately in the same hunt, but with a different prey?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think they want to win a Nobel Prize or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, whatever their glory is amongst the academia. You know, I think they're after that. You know, there's mm-hmm. something there. They're competitive with one another. They're okay. collegial for sure, mm-hmm. much more than, you know, the guys in the streets selling light bulbs every day. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely sizing each other's research up for sure.
Sure.
They're cooperating, they're releasing their findings, and they're hiding what they think is important, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think you're right about that. But I do think there's a motivation that's purer than the offhanded comment you made, that it is, gosh, isn't it great to have environmental benefits too? Yeah, sure, man.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is, really, when mm-hmm. you think about it, you know? So you're making calls out there every day.
Yeah, I'm the one. I'm the one that represents your crews.
Yeah, so you're making calls, you're talking to people. How much does the average person you talk to know about lighting?
It really, really just depends on obviously whom you're talking to and the like their supply chain level, of course. If I'm talking to an owner of any particular small to medium-sized business, per se, they know about the benefits and the rebate processes from governmental structures or from utility companies.
So this is across jurisdiction too?
Yes.
Multiple jurisdictions?
Multiple jurisdictions. I know, I would say 99% of owners of small to medium sized businesses know about rebate processes, but they don't know like the green or safety benefits like we were talking about earlier or anything like that. They just know the very basics of it. And they know that capital expenditures are way up, at least in the past. And these are things that I've noticed. If you talk directly to people who are working on the facilities day to day, like the maintenance people with inside facilities, they know all about the safety and green benefits and cutting down on injuries in the factory or something, or injuries in the manufacturing center, or sick days, things like that. They're more concerned about that. So it's, where do we find that crossover? And I think once you can explain the one side of the area that they don't understand the most, that's where you just, it's a green light. It's almost like, it's a no-brainer whenever you discover the end of the conversation that hasn't been brought up before.
Mm-hmm. How many years have you guys been calling on the lighting industry or generating leads for the lighting industry?
It's been about 3 years now.
So only LED focused. You never were in it prior to that?
Pretty much no. I mean, we kind of started with the LED industry straight lace. That was where we got into the lighting industry right there. We did not do any for high efficiency fluorescent bulbs. We weren't a part of those rebates from, you know, what was that, 5+ years ago?
Something like back to probably 2001, actually.
Okay, so way back then. No, we weren't in that game yet.
No, yeah, we worked with a lot of commercial electricians who, as the industry ramped up and they realized there was money to be made, a few of them started to get into the lighting business, and they asked us, hey, could you find us meetings to talk about retrofitting people to LED lighting?
And it was more the, we worked with a lot of like brokerages as well. We worked a lot with like the maintenance side of things, so upkeep of facilities. Typically, for instance, we worked with a lot of HVAC clients that would also have this side of their business, would look into LED upgrades as a just a new means. Like, it was interesting to them. They've never explored it before, so they said, hey, how about you guys go after this one wing of our company that we're just getting started?
Sure.
And that took off, and now we have...
Well, it's so easy.
Yeah, it really is. The conversation...
So there's 3 points.
Yeah.
You want more light?
Yeah.
You want to save some energy?
Yeah.
You want the rebate program to pay for half?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Bingo.
Sign me up.
And now we have, 63 LED clients all throughout Atrek.
What was your first market?
First market. Whoa, I don't even know that off the top of my head. First market.
Not sure.
I don't know.
I don't think
you know.
I don't know. No, I know that we, like any smart business person, realized
It might be out in Portland. That's one of our longest standing clients. Their name is Pacific Energy.
Okay.
And they've been with us for close to 3 years.
Props out to Pacific Energy. Let me ask a bit more about the awareness, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, the average medium-sized business owner is aware of the general benefits of LED.
Absolutely.
Better light, longer life, energy savings, rebates. They already know that, but they're already expecting your pitch a little bit.
Right.
How do you differentiate yourself then?
So the way we differentiate ourselves really relies upon, I guess, two different things. It's the question of, are you aware that rebate structures are going to change?
Mm.
And 99% of the time, people have no idea that rebate structures change. Because I know in Toronto, per se, they're going to change that completely.
Because
they have a six-year block, right? And come the end of 2020, they're going to completely revamp.
They're changing it right now, too.
Government structure is always changing it. But people aren't aware that... the rebates are going to go down exponentially, in the next few years or so. So that's my first way in. If people are saying, I'm so aware, I've done all my research, that's the first question that I typically ask.
Yeah.
Why are you waiting?
Yeah, like, why are you waiting? Is typically...
Why, it's time to jump in. I mean, the early adopter phase in LED lighting is long past us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a mature technology. There's nothing...
I mean, health, well, the technology is really, really efficient now in comparison to even 2 years
ago. Way better now. Like the LED tubes and the fixtures they come up with now are, wouldn't you say they're way better?
Yeah.
Like it's not even, like it's not even,
oh yeah.
They're probably three times better. I'm not just efficiency wise, but just heat dissipation. Mm-hmm. The way they're built, the way they hang in the ceiling, the lightness of
the
them.
The way they look.
The way they look, the optics, the reflectors, the covers, mm-hmm. And the tubes and the bulbs are just way better. They're way cheaper and they're more efficient. Like it's really astounding, actually, what this industry has been able to accomplish in a short. And they're healthier. You got flicker-free tubes now.
We're getting flicker-free, that's right.
Yeah, you got flicker-free stuff coming out now. You know, you have a lot of different, like the technology is exhibiting Moore's Law. You've mm-hmm. heard of Moore's Law from computers, from microchips. Mm-hmm. Every 18 months, it doubles in performance and halves in cost. Something like that is happening in the LED lighting.
That's exactly what I was about to reference, that Moore's Law. Yeah. It's very similar because the other thing, on the other side of things, you don't want to be the first person to jump into a completely new industry. And you don't want to be the last person. And we're getting to that point where you don't want to be the last person to miss out on all of these benefits. And that capital expenditure argument is currently eliminating itself. Because the actual expenditure is going down itself as well.
Sure.
And so they haven't done maybe an overarching assessment on the facility to a T that you guys might be able to do.
I think it's going to be cheaper to make an LED tube than it is to make a fluorescent tube.
It's getting close. Yeah.
Like, I mean, wouldn't they have a piece of glass? Yep. You know, you strip inside of it and they have the same bite bin.
Yeah, fluorescent prices is going up.
Yeah.
LED's coming down, so it's getting close.
Is that really happening? Fluorescent lights are going up in price.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure they are, because they're actually, they're using the equipment.
That makes sense.
They're using the equipment that they used to make fluorescent tubes with. They're modifying it to make LED tubes, and I know because you see the same tubes and end caps coming on LED tubes now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. On glass LED tubes.
Right.
And it's like, this looks like it came out of a fluorescent tube sealing machine. Mm-hmm. Not, you know what I'm saying? Like they're using that technology to make LED tubes now. Mm-hmm. So,
to what degree do you think that people have not upgraded yet because they're afraid of exactly this? If I know that I can get a new iPhone a year from now that's twice as fast, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be locked into this iPhone for 2 years, why wouldn't I wait until October when the new one comes out?
That's the opposite of the early adopter. What are the right. There's a name for those guys.
I don't know what they are.
There's like a name, early adopter, and then the guys, the tail end guys that are never going to switch.
The wimps, right?
The new BlackBerry Key 2, I have the Key 1, the Key 2 is coming out, and whatever, you know?
Right.
They're never going to turn. I mean, that's your sales job right there, but you got to talk those guys into taking the plunge.
Exactly. So that's the question. At this point, in a mature market, the early adopters have jumped.
Uh-huh. Sure.
The people that we're talking to all day know the benefits, they know that it's possible, but they haven't made the jump yet. Mm-hmm. In most cases, why? They're afraid to spend the money, they don't know enough about the technology, or they're afraid if they jump in now, a year from now, it's going to be way better, and they're not going to want to do another retrofit in a year.
Which ultimately comes back to that capital expenditure. That it ultimately comes back to that last mm-hmm. one you just mentioned.
That those are people that have just enough knowledge to be dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like the argument T5 versus T8.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's like, well, why would I do T8 when T5 mm-hmm. is going to be the latest thing in it? You know, it comes down to the fact that, you know, what is your cost of waiting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a great question. So we...
Like, if you say to someone like this, you say to them, you know, Nick, first of all, do you believe what I'm telling you?
Mm-hmm.
And no, of course I don't. No, actually, do you believe what I'm telling you?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? Well, do you believe that if I take out this much wattage out of your building that you'll save $7,000 a month? Or 2000, whatever it is. Yes, I do. Okay, so now we're in the realm of negative numbers. So I'm going to create an absence of that cost for you
mm-hmm.
in upgrading. So by the time you get to October, you'll have recovered $52,000. Do you believe me?
Yeah.
Right? These ask them, do you believe in science? Yeah, no, do you believe it? No, because some people don't believe. Like, you have to say, what's the problem that you're addressing? Is mm-hmm. the problem you're addressing the fact that they don't have any money? Is the problem that they're addressing that they're not the decision maker? Is the problem you're addressing that they don't believe you?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times it's that They just don't believe you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's ultimately why us getting your team in the door and being able to do that, that's right there. That's what separates us, being able to do that from the rest of your competitors, is asking that why question right there. Why don't you trust me?
Like, why should I do business with you?
Right. Why do you not trust me right now? And it's breaking down that wall. And once that wall is down, you guys are in the door.
Yeah, if you're able to create that, if you're able to get them to believe in the energy savings, like that's real, that those negative numbers are real. So what do you mean? I'm going to create negative numbers for you. What are you talking about? Well, what did you remember negative numbers from school? We're all math geniuses, the four of us.
Oh, absolutely.
We ended up as sales guys, right? So that's why we're not in engineering school at all. So no, but seriously, what do negative numbers do? They indicate an absence of something. So we're going to create some absence of money on your bill.
And here's the next level for those of you that want to sell more lights and take this to the next level. So the key is all of your potential customers know just enough to think that they know what's going on. And the reality is they don't. And what most people are looking for from a salesperson is not somebody that can tell them what they already know or ask them a bunch of questions. They're looking for somebody that can add value and teach them something that will positively impact their bottom line. So you mentioned just a second ago, what's the cost of inaction? If I can save you $7,000 a month on your energy bill and you wait six more months, that's $7,000 times six. Somebody smarter than me can do the math. I think it's $42,000.
So I think it's $35,000, but it's close anyway.
Somewhere in there. It's some tens of thousands of dollars. Sure. So one.
Not relevant.
Cost. Yeah, who cares? One cost, $35,000 added to your bottom line. But the step beyond that is, what if you took $7,000 a month and you added it to your sales team? Could you hire a rock star salesperson for $7,000 a month? And if you could, what would that person be able to generate in new sales? Now, all of a sudden, we're not talking about $7,000 a month. Now we're talking about the hundreds of thousands of dollars that's generated in new sales because we were able to save you $7,000 a month.
But it starts with their belief.
But you have to believe me. And it has to be a story. So I think, you know, you asked a second ago, well, how do we differentiate ourselves when we call in? The answer is we don't. You do. We're not talking about why Abstract or we as a caller are great. We're talking about why should they trust Premier Lighting? Why should they trust Lighting Solutions of Canada? And the answer in a lot of cases is because we've worked with X number of customers over the last 10 years because of this case study of a story of somebody else who's just like you that I was just in last month and I helped them save money. We're a full turnkey provider. I know you understand that you can save money, but it seems like this big, you got to fill out forms and you got to hire somebody to do the work. What if I told you that my company can take care of all of it? I'll tell you exactly the price. I can fill out the forms. I can get you the rebates. I can deal with the install. I can provide the fixtures, and I'll do it all, and you don't have to think about anything. Now you're adding value as a supplier, and that's how you build trust, and that's where your differentiation comes from. You can talk about lumens per watt all day long. The average business owner doesn't know what that means. What they care about is how are you going to save them? Yeah, exactly, exactly. Which we love to talk about, and maybe we will shortly. And I will not pretend to be an expert on. But business owners care about saving them time or saving them money. So if you want to differentiate yourself and you want to win that business, keep your focus on how you save them time and how you save them money.
Sure.
And if they trust you and they buy into that,
they're really the same thing.
And they're the same thing, exactly.
When you guys are talking, I'm going to change gears here.
Sure.
So one of the goals of this show, sidelines that we've come up with, is that we want to eliminate the 10-year warranty from the business. We think the 10-year warranty is outrageous. It causes problems, and it allows people that are willing to say anything to win, as opposed to those that are being realistic and honest with their clients. How do you guys, you guys have different priorities from your different customers that you work with. Are some of your people pushing the 10-year warranty? Do you guys want to push that 10-year warranty?
So I'll tell you, my job is I run a sales team here at Abstract. So my team is out selling new clients like yourselves, our services. David himself and his team are out fulfilling and scheduling you guys' meetings. The people that I'm talking to all day, yes, I hear 10-year warranty as a differentiator pretty regularly. The other thing I hear, though, is people that say, it's not going to work because I can't compete in my market because some guy is selling knockoff
nonsense from China at a price way cheaper than we could ever compete with. And it's not real, but customers don't know that. So I think that we do talk to a lot of people that want to offer the 10-year warranty, but I also hear a lot of people that complain, I'm assuming about the people that you're talking about, that are offering the world, or they're selling products that are maybe knockoff and aren't real what they say they are. And that, I hear all day long, is killing the legitimate, real people who are trying to sell great products to great customers.
Well, when I hear 10-year warranty, it's an immediate spark of there's a lack of trust. It goes back to what we were just talking about. When people try to put a 10-year warranty on something, saying, I'm putting my name on it. This is, we are here for you for the rest of time, essentially. That's how much I trust this product. Or it's a crazy reaction to what you were just talking about, of trying to get back into the market by offering some craziness yourself. Mm-hmm. It seems like a last failed effort, like just one final effort, a Hail Mary. 10-year warranty sounds like a Hail Mary to me
at
the
sure.
end of the day. And so when somebody hears that, like, that's too good to be true, which the old adage is, if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
But your job is not necessarily your job is to listen to your clients. If Mike says, sell my 10-year warranty,
I'm going
to
do it.
You're going to sell my 10-year warranty?
You better believe it.
Yeah, you have to.
Sure.
It's part of it.
With some coaching along the way. You know, if they give us a dumb differentiator that nobody's going to care about on the phones, then we'll absolutely tell them that.
Now, somebody can have a 10-year warranty and actually hold it and abide by it and still kick some ass in the market. Like, sure.
There's no 10-year warranties allowed, son. I don't want to see you out there with any more 10-year warranties. Yeah. 5,000 people listen to this show. I'm telling you, no more. Wrong.
Out of the kind of getting into some background. So 63 markets, you said.
Yes.
What is it safe to say you cover every region of the United States?
Yep. There is pretty much, I mean, large markets anyways.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you're in every region.
Yep.
We've got about, let's say, 115 full programs that we could probably still offer out there in different markets around the United States, something like that along your line. But here's the thing. We need to vet properly in order to make sure, like, you guys are going to have success. We don't just want to bring on everybody just to say, hey, come sign up with us. You're definitely going to see success here. Yeah, we have these 115 markets that could, you know, still potentially work. But we know for a fact that these 63 markets we have right now are extremely, like, there's tons of upside to every single one of them.
Is there one that stands out more than the rest in terms of
Minneapolis?
Easiest.
Yeah. I mean, regionally, if we're just talking East Coast, West Coast, I mean, we all know West Coast is a lot just simpler to talk to in terms of just your...
there's a difference between people around America. What I notice about Americans... is different. One of the major differences between Americans and Canadians is that Americans move a lot.
Oh, true.
Like, Nick, you ain't from St. Louis, are you?
No, I am.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
St. Louis.
If you make your story better, I'll lie.
You came to the right place. St. Louis and stay in St. Louis, man.
Like, is that right?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'll tell you, whenever I come to America, you go to some place, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm originally from Austin, and then I moved to, you know, Kentucky, and then I went over to live in Charlottesville, South whatever,
but that's true. I mean, that is too.
Americans move everywhere, and then all of a sudden, go team, go Charlottesville Tigers, and
right,
they just blend in. Whereas if you live in Toronto, buddy, you live in Toronto, son. Mm-hmm. You might move a little bit outside of Toronto, but you're not going to move to Vancouver. It doesn't happen nearly as much as it does in the U.S.
Interesting.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
I think that's one of the strengths of the American economy, is the people will move for jobs.
Yeah.
And I think what the major problem with the 2007 financial crisis was the fact that it was based in residential real estate, locked people in geographically, and they couldn't move like they used to. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, like, when the Depression happened in America, people flooded across America. They moved around, all around America.
Big old West Nation.
Right? And they just moved and moved till they found the work. And Americans have that sort of frontier spirit of finding the work and moving around.
We still really do, don't we?
Yeah. But the residential real estate problem, people went underwater with it. It prevented them from moving to find the jobs. Mm-hmm. And then people couldn't fill the jobs, and it really undercut the American economy. And I don't think people knew how much of an impact it has. Canadians don't move like that. First of all, Canada's huge.
Oh yeah.
And there's not a lot of stuff in between it. Mm-hmm. So Toronto and, you know, between Toronto and Thunder Bay, say, which is twice the size of Minnesota. So, okay. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, there's really nothing there. There's nobody lives there.
It's land space.
Yeah. Right? So we don't move as much, but I think it's one of the strengths of the American economy is the mobility of the people. And you don't have that in Europe. People stay in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. They won't move to Italy for work.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Americans will move from California to Jackson Hole or whatever.
So West Coast is generally a little easier to get appointments than the East Coast.
I wouldn't say easier to get appointments. It's easier to have like trustworthy conversations, though. Okay. I would say that's true.
Right.
Absolutely.
Here's what I would say. So my job is to go fill all these markets, right? Yep. And we're smart. So here's what I'll tell you. There's some markets. I'll give you an example. Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Energy prices, incredibly low. Yep. The payback times, significantly longer.
What are they paying per kilowatt hour?
I've heard as low as, I want to say, 4 cents. Ooh, like really, really low in Kentucky. So I had a few conversations in Kentucky. They said people are paying 4 cents a kilowatt. There's no rebates. I said, this is going to be tough. Mm-hmm. So for you out there, if you're selling lights in Kentucky, first of all, mad props to you. Second of all, if you want way more meetings, shameless plug, give us a call. Now I know, okay, Kentucky, there's not a lot of people that are really actively going after businesses in Kentucky because there's certain market factors that don't make sense. Now, aside from geography.
So like it's all payback driven then?
It is. Again, it comes back to money, right? Yeah. If they're not going to save a ton of money by doing it, most people don't just love the earth that much that they're going to go spend $30,000 or $40,000 to put LED lights in, knowing that they're not going to make their money back for a long time.
For the Mother Earth.
Mother
Earth. Why do you think we're having a lot of success in Portland, you guys? I mean, that's a really, really green community. Right?
Portland? Keep Portland weird, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
So you're saying it's easier in Portland because people are more green or they have more money to spend on this sort of stuff?
Well, I think that green initiative mindset out there is a lot stronger than anywhere else.
I don't think it's a green thing. I think it's still affecting their social standing in their community. If you have metal halides in 2019, there's something wrong with you.
Oh man,
you still got halides.
There's a social aspect to it on the West Coast.
For sure,
too. The social aspect of your business and where you stand say, hey, check out my new LEED certified building over here with all these.
It's like a Gucci
sweet new lights up in this place, and they're like, wow, I can see for days. You're super cool. There is a social status to it, and it is sociable. It is shareable on the social platform.
Yeah.
Like your business is way more shareable on the social platform.
What are you doing with halides in your warehouse in 2008?
Right. Come on. Get rid of it. It's time to move on.
I don't care if you're in Kentucky and it's 4 cents a kilowatt hour, bro. You still got halides in your warehouse, son.
It's time to move on.
Buddy. Yeah.
It's time to move on.
I mean, how much does a LED hybrid cost now?
It depends on which one and where.
I mean, come on, man.
$100.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Nothing.
So you have all these markets we talked about, and kind of what was easy. Now, in terms of getting leads, how many calls on average, emails, how many contacts does it take to actually get a qualified lead on average?
Yeah, so typically when we at Abstract are launching, for instance, just a bunch of new records for your team, it can take sometimes upwards of 8 calls to get what we like to call the actual key decision maker for that business on the phone and be able to pitch them about what you two are doing in your industry. Now, typically 44% of people, 44% of people prospecting their own business will get up off the phone and never call that business again after one no. We keep those people in your pipelines. And we call them again and again. And the algorithm that we've created here at Abstract is to reach back out to them every 3 months because eventually they're going to want to change their facilities over to LED.
Well, I'll tell you this, man, as a business owner, they're going to do it for sure.
They're going to do it.
They're going to do it with somebody. Mm-hmm. But the other thing, too, is like you kind of have respect for a guy. That even if you're rude to him a couple times, he still picks up the fucking phone and calls you. Yeah. Part of my language, they're all listeners, but I mean, there's nothing better than a guy like 3 months, not, you know, not every month. You're too aggressive with it.
Yeah.
It gets, but if you call it, somebody calls me 3 months, all right, what's up, man?
Yeah.
And on the third time, what is it that you want, man?
I think that happened with you when you called me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Took a while.
It took a few calls and a few conversations, but eventually we got there, and there's a stat online. It says 80% of all sales take more than 5 phone calls or 5 attempts before that conversation happens, before that conversation is created. And the bottom line is, look, nobody that has another job like you guys has time to remember to call every prospect that you talk to 5 times. Mm-hmm. Even if you met somebody on the golf course and they had a facility and they said, yeah, I've been thinking about it, and they gave you your business card, you'd go to the office, you'd call him once, you'd get his voicemail, you'd send him an email.
Yeah.
You'd forget for a week, you might call him again. Maybe if you're really dedicated, you call him a third time another week later. He still doesn't answer. You forget about him. You never talk to him ever again. Maybe he was on vacation. Maybe his kid got sick. You never know. So that's why, I mean, at the end of the day, that's why people hire us. It's not that this is an impossible thing to do. It's not that you couldn't pick up the phone and have a conversation and get a meeting. It's that you're running a business. Your sales team is out selling.
Well, you're saying it takes 80% use case in physics.
80%.
We're not even talking about a sale.
Right.
Just to get in the door.
We're talking about just getting in the door, man.
Yeah.
And I think those barriers are getting bigger and wider as we go forward in the world.
Well, there's like, more layers.
Yeah, right?
There's more people in the way.
It's getting harder and harder.
I think
to get
part of it, too, is his phone. I think you guys are probably finding that is not a lot of people want to talk on the phone anymore.
Sure. No.
They want to email.
Yep.
And that's it. They want to avoid that conversation if they can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be a big challenge for
them. Oh, yeah. Well, we take both routes.
I mean,
we have a completely revitalized email marketing specialist now in-house that really go after really.
I was interested in those P dots or whatever you guys put on your email.
Pardons. Yeah. P dots.
I love it.
What else? This amazing technology
that we use
you can see when people open up emails, click links, and how often they're going to search your website. Did they just get on Premier's website? We can find that out through part on our relationship with them. And we know the day and the time they did that. And we say, hey, it's Dave Lemon over at Premier Lighting or Lighting Solutions. Hey, just wanted to talk to you about this. I was curious. I was just thinking about you guys. And wait, he was just thinking about us too. Well, obviously, we don't bring that up.
Yeah.
He was on your website. Of course, it's top of mind.
Sure.
And when we like to say your opportunity, success is when preparedness meets opportunity.
I'll tell you a funny story, that's a good place to end today.
Call it right there.
Should I say that again?
Success happens when preparedness meets opportunity.
That's called serendipity right there, buddy.
Yeah.
So that's a good place to call it. But I'll tell you a little anecdote. Mm-hmm. So my wife was a consultant for a company called Capgemini, I think they were called. It's a huge European consulting firm, not big in North America, like 80,000 employees. And I remember her in 2001 coming to me, or 2002, and saying, I'm working on this project and it's kind of creepy. And she's like, what's that? She's like, we're trying to figure out how to watch people while they surf the internet. So they were trying to figure out this technology that watched how people used websites. And, you know, and now obviously you have Pardot and you got it basically, and everybody's comfortable with it. But they were talking about one of the big things was the ethics of this, whether it was ethical, but it is what it is, son.
It is. I do have one last one I want to figure out.
Yeah.
Times of day or days of the week that, in general, as you look at getting a hold of people, are there better? Are you guys finding one? I know everybody's different.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's hours are different, but is there one sweet spot that Tuesday at 11 a.m. everybody answers?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Fun little thing, sales tip for anybody out there in the world. I find the most success to get C-level individuals, owners, or directors of departments, VPs of department, on the phone at 5:10 to 5:20
p.m.
P.m.
So you're going to say a.m.
Because a.m.
That's
right
dedication.
They're on the treadmill. They've got their AirPods in. No. right there, because you don't have receptionists picking up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You've got direct lines for them. And they're going to be more able to talk to you because their day is done. They're happier. And typically find a lot of success in that 5.
I find 7 a.m. too.
Yeah, add that too. Right there.
I don't know, 5 a.m. or 7 a.m. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but typically if I want to talk to high-level employees and just cut the chain out of it and get ourselves way up there, get yourselves in front of the people that are actually signing the checks, that's what it's going to happen.
Any day of the week?
It's Thursday.
Thursday,
because 5:10 to 5:20. People do a lot of conferences from Monday to Wednesday. People that are going to conferences are usually like C-level employees. So Thursday's when they're coming back to the office. Friday's, you know, just a...
Now you guys are going to get a ton of comments. Like, hey, I called two people last Thursday from 5:10 to 5:20, and neither of them answered.
You call them on their cell phone?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love cell phones. Sometimes you just straight up ask for it. Don't give it to you. It doesn't matter.
So if we're gonna do cold calling, we have a hot 10-minute window. Otherwise, we hire you guys to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, you got your 10 minutes. Everywhere else, all the 8 hours of the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Nice. All right. Good questions.
Thanks. Cool.
Thanks for having us on, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Abstract Marketing Group. Greggy, can you do the URL for me, please?
I'll do it as good as I can. It's abstractmg.com. So that's Abstract Marketing Group.
Yeah,
and if you give them a call, you can call them at 314-526-0381, or you can go online and schedule an appointment. And if you mention Get a Grip on Lighting,
don't forget to tell them Get a Grip on Lighting sent you, man.
It's a 5% discount on your monthly outbound services. And I tell you from
do I get a discount? Do I get a 5% discount? I'm going to call right now and tell them Get a Grip on Lighting told me to call, because I'm a client of Abstract Marketing, and so is Greg. So both of us use these guys. So, I mean, that's probably better than any ad read. The show you listen to about lighting, both of us are Abstract clients. So that tells you something. Greggy, what else do they want you to say?
I think that was the basics of it. But you heard a lot of it today in our discussion with them. Mm-hmm. Lead generation takes effort. It takes persistence. It takes dedication. And a lot of us don't have that, unfortunately. We might think we do, but we have other stuff to do. We can't be doing this all day long. They do that all day long for you.
Ooh, they hit that meat grinder hard, and they turn the crank.
135 calls a day.
Ooh.
That's intense.
I might do that a month.
Yeah. You might call me 135 times a month.
Might be, yeah, something like that. Jeez, that's a lot of calls every day, folks. So check out Abstract Marketing Group. Go to abstractmg.com. I'll get really good at that. I'll get really good at that. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, the new symbol. We're going to take over the world, folks. Join Nailed, NAILD.org. That's Nailed.org for information on joining. You can ask for Christian Amato. Tell him Get a Grip on Lighting sent you. And of course, Greg, thanks to our listeners and to Nick and David. We had a great time, especially those tacos we had after we talked. I think that was my favorite part.
Those were nice too, yeah. But yeah, great discussion at their facility. Very impressive building, as we know, and how their environment is a cool one for what they do.
Oh, sure. They got the swankiest office I've ever seen. Holy mackerel. Mm-hmm. They got it going there. Good. You know what? What I want to know is, remember that pizza we had after the tacos?
Yes.
Remember that pizza? It was really good, wasn't it?
Yeah, epic pizza, yeah.
Yeah, it was so delicious and cheesy. Remember that? Was that Provel cheese or was that mozzarella cheese?
I think they said it was mozzarella.
Yeah.
But Provel is a little different, but yeah. I think it was mozzarella.
Yeah, get that Provel. I'm not a big fan of that Provel. Sorry, St. Louis. Give me the matzo. Got to deal with it. Of course, thank you for listening. That was from the Abstract Boardroom. And, of course, always love our sponsors, our listeners, our guests. Thanks for supporting the show. That's another one coming at you from the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is there to find you.